All right, so you want to start us, or where do you want to go? Local. We're doing local.
no, welcome, everybody, to the local
hour.
We're
doing local tomorrow is what we're doing.
Welcome. Yeah, this is... Hi, we've stuck around late. Sugatch just did stupidity. I'm tired. This is what we like to call two old guys complaining. Look at this.
Yeah, but you're not old yet.
No, I'm there.
A couple old guys cutting it up.
I'm there. I do this thing where I'm like, man, I don't like the way that I look in this shirt. And I'm like, that shirt's the problem. Right?
And I'm like, I've been doing it for years. Yeah. Yes.
And then I look at the scale, and I'm like, oh, decidedly not the shirt's fault.
Because when you were younger, and you're not old, again, Mike is far from old. I'm old. Dan is older.
I mean, but I just turned 35.
Okay, but in your 20s, you feel like you can, even when you're 30, you feel like you can wear anything, and you can pull it off,
Holy
right?
Holy shit, I'm 35. This happened a couple of weeks ago.
You're just realizing?
Wow, that's the first time I've said it out loud.
Wait till you're a couple of years away from 50, my friend.
Oh, my God. So now I'm doing this thing, and this week there have been heavier lifts and lighter lifts. Yesterday was a very heavy lift in terms of the content stuff, and I know you people listening to this don't want to hear someone complain about how hard this is. I'm not doing that. So remember the point that I made like 2 minutes ago, well, like 60 seconds ago, about how my shirts aren't fitting great?
Yes.
I gained 15 extra pounds during this pandemic.
Right.
From where I'd like to be. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be, for me, the sweet spot is somewhere between 205 and 210.
Right.
I ballooned up to 220.
Right.
Which is too big. Too big.
Okay.
So now I'm starting to work out.
But
again.
You're tall, so you wear it well. You know
that,
right?
Yeah,
that's
but
the advantage you have.
I think nothing depresses me more than seeing an older video from the show that some of the accounts put out. I'm like, damn, I look good there. What happened?
Yes, there was a time, a very long period of time, where you were by far the best looking guy in the show. I'm not certain you're still not, by the way.
Not anymore. That time is come and gone.
Who would it be? I mean,
we got Tony. Young buck. Right, yeah, let
Tony,
him run.
Tony's you 10 years ago.
So I'm trying to go to the gym. And restrictions, finally. I like playing soccer. They've loosened up to the point. Now, I play soccer with a mask on the entire time, even though it's very difficult Good. For soccer for the virus to transfer during the actual sport. Very rigid rules where I play soccer.
Is everyone else wearing a mask?
We all wear a mask.
Okay.
Which, for me, as a keeper, I'm far away from the action, so it's overly safe, but it's a good precaution. So I'm getting back in there. So I play keeper. My body's falling on the ground. Some turf more rough on the body than others, but I'm getting back in there. So I'm coupling not just this content lift, not just for Levitard and Friends and our radio show that's required us to get in much earlier. Chelsea's back in season. And I'm coupling all that with being the father to a one-year-old. And now I'm trying to, like, get fit. And I'm getting muscles activated that haven't been activated during this pandemic. So I am just dead. 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 My lower back is hurting. I'm dead. And my question to you is, you feel like this all the time?
Actually, you're me. You are me 10 years ago for me. Yes, I feel like this all the time. It's a product of, Mike, understand this. I had all the same stuff, similar stuff going on at the time, okay, when I was your age, except I had two kids, okay? I had twins, and so it's very difficult. And then, I don't know about you, I stopped doing some of the things I love doing. Soccer, basketball. I didn't ever play soccer.
Well, I was forced to
because
of the pandemic.
I just want to be there with my kid.
Well,
you know?
for me, it's a right. life balance thing.
Right.
And obviously a waistband thing because I gained weight during this pandemic because I couldn't do this stuff like play soccer. And now Florida's different, and I'm sure there are people listening to this that are appalled. I take all the precautions necessary or CDC recommendations. Obviously, the ideal thing is to not do this. Look, I've got a lot of stress. This is a difficult job, especially back here in the studio. This is a job of four people, not to toot my own horn or anything like that, but it's a very physically and mentally draining thing, and I need to have some outlets. My outlets are working out and playing soccer. I'm so happy to get back into the swing of soccer.
Right.
But I'm not who I was 8 months ago. My body needs to be conditioned to taking all these bumps, and I'm like not as flexible. And what do you 10 years ago, every day
you'd go into the studio. Is gambling not an outlet, by the way?
I mean, it's a pastime.
Okay.
But I remember 10 years ago, you would get epidurals in your back.
What do you mean? I mean, I got one 10 years ago, and my back has never felt better. I haven't had an issue since. It's unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very easy cure. Listen, some people, they hurt their back, okay? And they offer surgery. They offer physical rehab. This is the way I've always been, okay? Why drink 20 beers when I could have two shots at tequila, okay? Well, like, just get right to the point, okay? And so for me, why endure a four-hour surgery, rehab after that, when they could just stick a big-ass needle in my back? And that's what they did. And I haven't had back issues in a decade. And I suggest you do the same thing.
That seems short-sighted. It seems dangerous in the future. It
also
seems
on-brand lazy for him.
Generally,
get to the point.
So reckless and so lazy. The thing that he didn't say to you guys is that he comes in here once a week, hunched over, with something that resembles back pain or just is walking wrong because something hurts.
It's killing me right now.
I'm uncomfortable with how this one started because this is a very self-involved week for me. I'm talking way too much on this, but here we go. Us three, Dan, Sugats, and myself, we're the only ones allowed presently right now in the studio. And Dan and I have talked about it some in terms of like what the difficulty is and how much we miss the other cast members. And then there are certain days and moods where I'm like, man, I'm so happy I'm by myself back here. Quite honestly, but what sort of difficulties have you guys had in terms of drumming up the content on this show? Because we are reworking how we've done the show.
It is spectacularly self-involved, but I don't believe that anybody in the world knows the difficulties that Sugats has doing Sugats's job better than Sugats. I believe that no one knows what my difficulties are more than me, and Mike knows what his difficulties are and knows what our difficulties are. This is a different version of our show. I'm happy with the evolution and the incarnation that has resulted from all of the problems because doing the show now is almost as fun for me as when everyone is in the studio. But the best version of our show is the one when we are having the most fun and hitting the notes sort of on improv musical notes, and we can't do that because we're missing so many of our instruments. So we're doing the best that we can to give you the version of our show that you're used to, and I'm guessing that many people out there have forgotten that we're not all together because we've gotten to a place
pretty good
where we've hit the rhythms pretty good, but the degree of difficulty on doing this when I can't go to the Billy and Chris and Roy funny just because they're making a face because we can't get the timing right on that stuff.
I have found it. I think we've done a pretty good job, but I have found it to be pretty exhausting from this standpoint. It's just easier. Mike, there's a look I'll give Chris or a look I'll give Billy or a look Dan will give any one of you in that studio. And you guys know exactly what we want. And that's kind of gone away where we're just kind of pointy. It requires more communication.
But this is what I was saying, though.
It's exhausting.
The point that I meant about to tell the audience this, because I don't think the audience really understands or has to think about this stuff ever, okay? But really, the reason that more often than any, I'm an actual asshole on the air that makes you dislike me or strident or obnoxious is because I have to spin the plates to get everyone else in the positions that they need to get in. It happens to Mike when I'm not here. The reason they think, I don't think the audience understands at all what a great winning position it is for Billy, Chris, Hawk a long time ago, Sugats, to not have to be the leader of this thing that keeps it on the rails. Because when I'm not here, Mike gets hit with all the shit that engulfs me because he's trying to keep it on the rails. He talks too much. He ends up talking too fast. Sugats, look, man, you've led this show.
Yep.
You love to just toss it to them and let them do the work, but you know what the backlash is when you have to lead the show. People like you less. They end up liking you less because it's such a winning position to get in the windows and be the one who undermines the lead talker, gas bag, straight guy.
Yeah, it's well, I have noticed that they like the show less too, which is there's nothing we can do about it because when one of us is not there, it's just gonna suffer a little bit. And I'm not just saying one of us, me and you. I'm saying even when one of the guys isn't here,
it really changes everything.
Yes.
Everything when one note is missing.
We work so much off of nonverbal. When we're all in the studio, that's easier to do. It's much more difficult to do when someone is looking or not looking in a Zoom screen. We'd like to be a pretty seamless show, even though it's a bit of a mess. It's kind of clean sounding, and we're doing things like "Go ahead, Chris. We'll be back after this." Much more than we're
hate
comfortable
it.
Doing.
I hate it.
But there are times where, especially for me, when I'm doing the local stuff with the guys in the shipping container, if I don't see them looking in a Zoom, I'm like, well, I guess I got to keep talking because I'm not sure if they have stuff. But if they're looking into a Zoom, which is the only way for them to see me, I assume they have something and they don't.
You don't always know.
It's a mind trip.
Mike, I got to tell you, I have felt for you recently in this respect because I really don't think, Stugatz, that people understand the amount of plate spinning that Mike is doing. And now I've thrown two calls at him all week
where he's
got to take calls as well. I do think, though, that what ends up happening is that because of the way that we are doing this, many of you are really being mean to Mike because you don't understand what it is to try and talk to a computer screen and do a radio show and how it'll force you to speed up and talk too much because someone's got to talk because the thing that happens, watch this, it's fascinating.
Someone's got to say something.
No, he proved the point because we were all uncomfortable. I could telegraph.
I ruined
that.
The bit. No, somebody's okay. Got to get in there. Always somebody's got to get in there.
He proved your point.
I was nervous.
Somebody has to get in there and talk because it's radio. There's nothing else here. We exist inside your head and nothing else exists here. So if I stop talking, it is fascinating though because I don't know when the Zoom is stuck. I don't trust that people are going to get into the Zoom. I was waiting for that to lay out a little bit. I wanted the joke of just how uncomfortable the silence is. Because I wanted people to be pressing like their devices, like, where is it? Where? What happened?
And then what happened was Sugat's getting uncomfortable with the silence.
I think we showed him how uncomfortable it is. I lasted 4 seconds.
Yeah, there are times.
4 seconds? You lasted 4/10 of a second.
It felt like
more.
And occasionally Zoom does that thing that we all despise, right. Which is there's a box. The person's not muted. They're speaking. Everything about this situation is telling me sound should come through my board. But it's not. And it's just, oh my God, why? It's so difficult.
I am sorry. It is a benefit. It is a great benefit to the people involved here. Like, it is a winning position for Greg Cody, for my father, for Stugatz, for the producers. But I hate that for Mike Stugatz, I hate that he has gotten what I've gotten buried in around here for about 20 years where... Mike is now getting a great deal of the hate that comes with being lead gas bag.
So I was distracted. Hey, Sports Center, last take, first take, whatever it is, Harden to the Sixers. Are you kidding me? Like, give me a break.
That's how his mind works, man.
Seriously, James, that's going to fix it. James Harden to the Sixers.
We can't do 15 minutes of content without something like this.
You think they send Embiid or Simmons for Harden? Because Daryl Morey is going to take over the Sixers now. You think it's Embiid or Simmons that they get for Harden? Because you know Morey wants Harden because Morey loves getting knocked out game 6-7 Eastern Conference Finals. How about that?
I'll bite.
Okay.
Ben Simmons isn't a fit for the style that Daryl
Morey
likes.
I think he
is. What about him? Is it his amazing three-point shooting?
Driving to the paint, kick it out to James.
That's what James Harden is supposed to be doing.
I will say this, though, Mike. The thing that Daryl Morey likes, and this is way too hardened sports analysis that Stugatz has somehow led us to because he wants to talk about transactions, but Ben Simmons is the lead creator of threes in the entire league. So if you go to the best version of the Sixers, it's Redick, it's Ilyasova, it's shooters, it's what is that guy's name? Saric? Dario Saric?
I think he was... Jimmy Butler deal.
Yeah, no, he's not there. I'm saying the best version of the Sixers was Ilyasova, Redick. The Sixers around these guys is when they surrounded those two guys with shooters because Ben Simmons is a leader in the league in creating threes for others.
Right. They don't have shooters, though. And he's part of
that
problem.
But he's got to get them.
Is Tobias a shooter?
Tobias is probably their best outside shooter. And Tobias, I think we all know at this point what Tobias Harris is. I'm just saying, the reason why I was just like, no, James Harden's not going to work there is because you're probably going to give up Ben Simmons to get James Harden, right? And those two do not mesh whatsoever.
I would tell you, and I don't know whether or not Daryl Morey is going to trade for James Harden or not, but what I do think Daryl Morey is going to do is be inventive. And I find most interesting about this that Daryl Morey just thought that the Philadelphia job was a better job than the Houston job, that it is done there. Like, he left there, and I don't know how much that has to do with China and how much money he cost everybody and Fertitta being a Trump guy. Yeah. I don't have any idea how much.
He has a different owner now than the one that hired him.
But, I mean, I would choose the East over the West. He had a great – this is a great opportunity for him because you have Golden State coming back. They're going to be healthy next year. It's going to be impossible for that team to get through the Western Conference.
Amin has his take that Daryl Morey is a little bit overrated, and I think it's fair. Naturally, the way that everyone's brain works when you mention Daryl Morey is like, well, they're going to have the analytical advantage. Daryl Morey may have written the book on that. The book is out on that. Everybody does the shit Daryl Morey does from that point of view. What Daryl Morey's greatest asset, I think, as a general manager is he goes for it.
I was going to say fearless. I don't think it's X's and O's. It's strategy. It's market inefficiencies being exploited. I think it's that he's not afraid doing the job. That if they'll go small ball, they will, they'll try and get Russell Westbrook. They'll try and get Dwight Howard. They'll try and get James Harden.
I'll make the argument that during his time in Houston, and this includes Pat Riley and what he was able to pull off down here, nobody was better at executing the mega deal than Daryl Morey. Just think about the track record. The Chris Paul deal was a big deal. Getting Dwight Howard, how we got him away from Los Angeles, and the way that he manipulated his roster just to be in the room and convince Dwight Howard to be there, that was a massive deal. The James Harden trade is one of the biggest trades in NBA history. He pulls off all these deals with not a lot of cap room, and you're left wondering, hey, how is he doing this? He goes for it. He's going to have to be aggressive because I think we all know that roster ain't it.
He traded away Capella, didn't he? Because he, I remember him, like, he kind of insinuated there's no room for that kind of player in the NBA anymore, or at least on my team.
Even though he doesn't have a title to represent it, what I think Daryl Morey is good at is looking at the team and saying, this is not good enough. He's going to have to do that in Philadelphia, because I think if you look at that team, it's not good enough.
You can say he's overrated, and I'd understand it, but he has made his name on the thing that you're talking about, which is he will take big swings and he will acquire the big guys. And frankly, Stugatz, if I told any GM in the league right now or any aspiring GM, look, here's where we're starting with this job you have.
Mm-hmm.
You have Embiid and Simmons. Every GM is saying, let's go. Let me see what I can do around that. Let me see if I can trade one of the pieces. But I'm starting with young and hugely talented, and you're going to give me two of them. Indisputably hugely talented two young pieces. Daryl Morey just added, okay, because Westbrook and Harden are in their 30s,
right.
He just added to his career lifespan as a GM by signing up for younger pieces to be inventive with.
I just don't think that organization knows exactly what it wants to be and what it's doing. I think it's an odd pairing, Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers. I think Doc Rivers is an odd hiring considering his track record of losing locker rooms. That was a mess. All the stories are coming out now. That was a mess in Los Angeles. It was a very public mess after the fact in Boston. And you seem to have a dynamic between Embiid and Ben Simmons. And Jimmy Butler might have been the wedge that drove them apart. But I don't see where he fits. I don't see where he fits now with this front office. I don't know where Elton Brand fits with Daryl Morey.
Well, he's still the GM.
I'm confused at what they're doing on the court and off the court over there in Philadelphia. And I think this speaks to it rather than cures it.
I think it all gets fixed, Mike, if the players are right and good. And I think that the part that doesn't make sense to me is Simmons and Embiid. That's not going to win you a title. I'm sorry. Ben Simmons being a guy who's your primary ball handler, not being able to hit a three ever is not going to.
You can say that's not going to win you a title, but that was a bounce away 2 years ago from beating the team that did win the title.
I think it's good enough if they have a third piece.
But Dan, that team also had JJ. You mentioned they had no outside shooters. They had outside shooters.
But I mean,
shooters
he can get shooters.
Team.
I mean, Morey, like the least Morey he can do. The least he can do is get shooters.
They're good defensively. I don't know if you can count on Embiid still being that defensively. I just think you're going to need to make some big-time roster decisions, and you're kind of limited with the contracts that they dished out. There aren't attractive pieces on there, except for Ben Simmons and Joel.
You don't have to make big-time roster decisions. You got to make one. Are you going to do it with Simmons and Embiid, or are you going to trade one of them?
And which one?
Like, those are the – that's it. Like, there ain't anything else to decide there. Do you believe that nine shooters around Simmons and Embiid is going to win you a championship?
I really love in today's NBA. I'd like to see it, Mike. Okay, get rid of the big guy in Embiid. Okay, let him go elsewhere. I would love to see what it looks like if Ben Simmons, okay, small ball, drive into the paint, and dish it out to any one of four good shooters. I'd like to see what that looks like.
Yeah. I know that the draw, just from public comments – from Doc Rivers, the draw to this job was Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And here we all in agreement that Daryl Morey's going to look at that roster and obviously say, well, I probably have to pick one. And again, it just speaks to the mess, an identity crisis over here with Philadelphia. They don't know what they want to be. And now they're just like, they're Stugatz. They're just hiring names.
Stugatz is also saying, though, he'd like to see what it looks like, Ben Simmons with no Embiid and just shooters. It looked like a 20 games worse than Milwaukee team that tries to play like Milwaukee.
That's a good point.
That's what it would end up looking like, because if you don't have to respect Giannis from three, you sure as hell don't have to respect Ben Simmons from three, and then you get into the postseason, all of a sudden you're playing a whole game where you're daring Ben Simmons to shoot from out there, and you're losing in five games to the Heat in a way no one can explain.
I'd be an awful GM.
Stugatz, yeah. I think this local hour.
What day is this?
It's still today. Look at me. You're still here.
Today is Friday. It is Friday today, right now. It is Friday morning. We are live.
We came in early specifically to do this.
Okay.
I think that local hour that you just heard, and this is part of it still, speaks exactly to some of the stuff we were trying to address. We're all in different roles here during this pandemic, and we were headed towards, quite honestly, one of the worst bits of content we ever put out there. We were talking about our backs hurting, and then Dan sits down, and we all get so comfortable back in our roles.
Can I be clear? You were talking about your back.
I mean, you kind of helped.
I didn't.
Look, we're doing a sponsored segment about what are you having for lunch. Like, it's the laziest possible content creation.
It was bad.
Like, what are you surprised that when I'm not here, Stugatz reverts to total laziness and talking about, hey, what's the thing?
I didn't ask for any of this.
You are absolutely the guy who is an anchorman who just sees a lamp and then says, let's talk about the best lamp.
Yeah. We were talking about how it's a winning position for Hawk in the history of the show. It was a winning position for me until I went out into another role. Stugatz has had it figured out for the longest time, because when you go out, when you're not a part of that local hour, I talk more. So not only am I a shittier version of myself, I'm also a shittier Dan Lebatard. So that's not good.
I just stay right in my lane, baby.
He continues to outsource.
Well, what I love,
he talks less.
Mike, what I love to see is whenever I'm watching you guys and I'm not here, I'm on vacation or whatever, Stugatz gets that pose that he gets, like that is totally relaxed, his sort of hand in his pants, leaning back in his chair.
Right now.
Maximum lazy, sort of holding the microphone. And all he's doing is just lobbing lazy crap into the room. Like, just with a spatula, he's just lobbing laziness into the room. What do you guys think of this and that and this and that? And it worked, because he gets to stay in the role.
Yep.
And Mike immediately picks up, okay, I guess I've got to be asshole straight man who's talking too much, as Stugatz gets to be in the center of the empire just pooping out content.
I mean, listen, when you're not here, I need an asshole, so I go to Mike.
I understand.
Sorry.
Thank you.
He needs to find one. This is the thing about how we do the show, right? Because I'm sure people have noticed this around here. When Stugatz isn't here, somebody else, Greg Cody, Amin, or Izzy, or Sedano, or somebody else is sort of playing the role of Stugatz. They're harder to find, these Stugatz unicorns. Didn't Bomani today.
Bomani on today's Big Suey, Dan.
He calls Stugatz a unicorn in this business, because he was talking about Mike and Mike and the idea that Mike and the Mad Dog, idea that the Mad Dog character, because I'm pretty annoyed, Stu Gatz. What's happened with Chris Carton? Like, it's ugly.
Craig Carton.
What's happened? You know what? I came very close to calling him Craig Carson, and so I corrected it on the back end and got it wrong on the front end.
It's early on a Friday morning, man, and we get it. It's okay.
I was bothered by the fact that HBO did something with him that was flimsy because he was in bed with the people making the film in exchange for the access. And so it became this thing that is not really transparent, but can feel like the illusion of transparency if it's set up right in a documentary. Vulnerable to the degree that he was willing to be vulnerable, but not really vulnerable as part of a comeback tour. And now he is working in New York, or is about to, at the same station where he ends up in prison because he feloniously sort of defrauded people, not sort of, did defraud people, turned FAN upside down, and ends up coming out of jail and has a job again at WFAN. It is a little bit upsetting if you care about this business and fair chances. And we were talking about his talent, and you and I disagree on how talented this person is. You know more of his career than I do, because what I saw in the HBO documentary about him basically reinforced what I thought of him. And he is you without the self-awareness. Your character, it's the Mad Dog without the self-awareness. It's the guy who actually is a barking, yipping dog, but also takes himself seriously from within being a barking, yipping dog. And so Bomani was just marveling at the idea that you're a unicorn in this business, that there is no second person allowed to do it like you. And it's the combination of being self-deprecating and our forced self-awareness on you, where you're the guy who actually says it was unanimous. I think the vote was 12-3, and you're willing for us to be able to play with that. Can you imagine?
Still not sure what I did wrong there.
Can you imagine? I want you to imagine how that one goes over with Boomer Esiason,
Booms,
and Craig Carton.
You can't make a nickname a shorter nickname.
What do you mean?
Yes, he can. You try him, Mike Ryan. You try him and see if he can't make it a shorter nickname. He took Boomer. What is Boomer's real name?
Booms.
I've always assumed it was Boomer.
It's because Norman Julius Esiason.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
His name is Norman?
I believe so, yeah.
Norman? No wonder he wanted to change to Boomer. Norman Esiason is not an MVP of a league.
No, but Boomer.
Norm?
Is.
Norm.
Norm.
It is Norman.
Norm Esiason?
Norman Julius Boomer Esiason.
I don't know which one's more shocking, the Norman or the Julius, because Julius Esiason is totally a scrambling quarterback.
Dr. J.
The doc. I thought he was going to shorten that one, too.